And we're ready to begin with the 7th verse of the 31st chapter of Isaiah. This 31st chapter of Isaiah has to do with a woe being pronounced upon the people of Judea because they were going down to Egypt for help instead of turning to God. And the circumstance of this was when the Assyrian army was threatening, led by Sennacherib, and they thought that there would be no way that they could possibly save themselves from the onslaught of this army, so they were turning to Egypt to make an alliance with Egypt for help. So God pronounced a woe upon them for doing this, for turning away from him to foreign nations for help. And so beginning in the 4th verse, he begins to give an inducement to them to put confidence in Jehovah. And he tells how that he'll be like a lion roaring on its prey as he comes to save and to protect them. And in verse 5, is he'll be like a bird defending its young to defend them. So in verse 6 he says, "Turn ye unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted." Now they had revolted from Jehovah. They had turned from him. And so he's simply begging them to turn back to him from whom they had deeply revolted. "For in that day," verse 7, "every man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin." Now he's speaking of a time in which he's going to be their God. They're going to put entire, total trust in him. And as he describes this time, he says, "Every man will turn away from his idols of silver and his idols of gold." And now this sin of idolatry was one of the crowning sins of these people of Judea. It was one of the primary reasons that 150 or so years from this time they would be taken into captivity into Babylon. It seems that they never before the captivity learned the full lesson of abstaining from idolatry. We think a lot of times in our own minds of the fact that they had gone into this land and just taken up the gods that already were there, and how easy this would have been to have done this. But as he described this in verse 7, he says, "which your own hands have made unto you for a sin." These were idols, not that they had just kind of fallen into, but they had made these idols. "Your own hands have made them unto you for a sin." Now this should also be another lesson to us, and that is that any one of us are capable of doing things with our own hands that God would look upon as an abomination and a sin. We do not have to just take the things that other men have made for us and give us as sinful devices, but it's possible for each one of us to also, with our own hands, make something that'll be a sin. And it's just as much a sin if we make it as it is if the wickedest person that ever lived made it. And God will regard it as such. So in verse 8, he begins to tell them how he is going to turn back this Assyrian onslaught. He says, "Then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword, not of a mean man, shall devour him." That is, the Assyrian would fall, he would be turned back, but it would not be the sword of a mighty man or of a mean man. And the word mean here means common or average, ordinary man. In other words, it would not be their doing. It wouldn't be their sword that would cause the Assyrian to fall. It wouldn't be a mighty man. It wouldn't be any heroic efforts on their part that would bring this about. "But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited." Now, this, of course, did happen. It's recorded for us in 2 Kings. How that in one night, 185,000 of these Assyrians, as they besieged the city of Jerusalem, 185,000 of them were put to death. And the king, the leader, Sennacherib, was routed. He fled all the way back to his home city of Nineveh, and there he died. And so it says, "and his young men shall be discomfited." And the word discomfited means to be melted or to be taxed. That is, it's going to be so spread or so thinned out that they won't have any resistance. He'll have no army, really, to give him any help. And so he's going to flee. And he shall pass over to his stronghold for fear. Now, his stronghold means the strong fortresses or strongholds that he has. And what this really means is that he's going to flee in such a haste and with such deliberation, he's not even going to stop at any of his fortresses along the way for protection, but he's going to go beyond them. And his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, that is his underlings, who are his commanders. They'll be afraid also of the sign or the ensign, which is another word for a flag or an insignia, saith the Lord, whose fire is in Zion and his furnace is in Jerusalem. Now, this is the Lord saying this. The Lord, whose fire is in Zion. And the word fire here means altar. And the altar, of course, is the place of worship. It's the place round about which God's priest rendered him the service. And so he says, whose fire or whose altar is in Jerusalem or in Zion. And his furnace, and the word furnace here means oven, is in Jerusalem. And the word oven or furnace would maybe signify this was his home. This is where he made his abode. Where's your furnace? Where's your oven? It's just your home. So he's simply telling them as this prophecy closes that even though this great army is going to besiege them as a city, he is going to be their protector and he'll not allow them to be injured by it. Now as we begin chapter 32, we have a